How does one define fortitude? How does one define bravery?
Yes.
How does one define courage?
I'll tell you. I'll tell you exactly how. I know. Hang on. You know how you do it?
How you do it?
When you work with the sniffles. That is courage. That is bravery. That is honor. That is sense of obligation and duty. That is pride of ownership. That is craftsmanship. Greg Wyshynski, and that is what we stand for. Working with the sniffles today.
Before today, I had no concept of courage, no concept of fortitude, no idea how far a man could push himself to realize the ideal and dedicate himself to his craft.
But then
I realized that I was on the air sharing the same airwaves, sharing the same oxygen in many ways, with a true Canadian icon and a hero to all involved in the great sport of hockey, ice hockey.
Yeah.
Ice hockey.
Like grass baseball?
That's right.
Someone tweeted, who was it? Jonathan Torrance said, next time someone refers to it as ice hockey, turn back and say, is that like grass baseball?
There's two times that I've seen it referred to ice hockey that was valid, which is one, when other countries that don't have hockey as their primary love of game, and it's field hockey instead, they have to call it ice hockey. And two, obviously, anytime they reference it in California, because they're still getting used to it.
Yeah, it's not bad. I don't feel good. What time did I send you guys that text last night? Like 4 o'clock
in
the morning?
4 o'clock in the morning.
Four in the morning. Yeah. I send Maddie and Greg a text. Yeah, I don't know, boys. I get home last night after doing the Wings and Sharks game, right? And I'm like, I don't feel great, but whatever. I'll get a good night's sleep and I'll be fine. Go right to bed. Can't sleep. Eyes open wide. And then tossing, turning around 4 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden I'm getting the sniffles and I'm sneezing. I'm like, oh, this sucks. This is awful. I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. I've got to do the Guelph London game, CHL today. I got radio hits throughout the morning. Got this podcast. Got Strombo feature. I'm like, nope, I'm not doing any of it. Didn't sleep. And I'm like, you know what? I woke up, wish. I honestly said this to myself. Merrick, you don't work for a living. You don't. Get up and you go talk about things. You don't have to go work out. You don't have to lift anything today. You don't have to sweat. There are people that have real jobs. Just suck it up and go. And so I'm here. I'm here. I'm going to sound snotty and sniffly and nasally on the air, but so be it. I'm here.
See, it's so funny that you see it that way. Because when I'm sick and I'm faced with these questions, I think of the same thing. I think to myself, well, it's not as if you're digging a ditch. It's not as if you're lifting anything heavy. It's not as if you're doing anything all that important. And then I think to myself as I sink back into my pillow, you don't do anything important. No one is going to miss you. Let's just call it a day, baby.
No.
Let's fire up the Netflix and call it a day.
Oh, people are dying to know what Jeff Merrick thinks of the Yager deal and the Clarkson deal. I have an obligation. Like a jackass.
All right, listen. Let's get to it because I'm sure you're going to have limited time because you don't feel so good, but...
I'm all right. I got a little...
The Clarkson deal is, as I wrote on Talk Daddy today, pretty much my favorite trade of the last maybe 20 years.
Okay.
Maybe since the Lindros trade. Okay. It might be my favorite trade.
Okay. Why?
All right. For several reasons. I have never seen a trade that tied up so many loose ends, that tried to rectify so many mistakes in one fell swoop, that danced so perilously close to being something that should be illegal or outlawed. And that was sort of just two teams coming together and the stars aligning in a way that they had to in order for this transaction to happen. This trade could not have been executed with any other team in the league but each other because of their incredible, regrettable, in one case man-made, in one case act of God circumstances.
Well, no, because Horton was man-made as well, because they just didn't want to pick up the premium on the insurance on the initial contract.
But you know what I'm talking about. The premium and insurance wouldn't even matter if it wasn't for the fact that he had a degenerative back disorder.
No, but that's it. That contract became uninsurable, but they chose not to insure it in the first place because it's coming off the bad wing. So like,
you're saying because they signed him when he was injured?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, that makes sense.
So they decided not to because the premium is going to be so much, and they said, well, you know what, it'll work itself out, and then at that point we can insure the contract.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the back situation happened, and they went, uh-oh, this is uninsurable now.
I give I give them a little bit more of a break than I do Nonis, though. I mean, the guy who threw all the money at the guy who had one good season with one particular coach in a market in which he wasn't going to have a Wendell Clark mustache placed on his face on the cover of a newspaper the day he signed.
Oh, you mean the Wendell Clarkson cover? You mean that one?
Jesus Christ.
First of all, there's a myth out there right now about this trade. The myth is that this is a trade that was done by two general managers. I assure you, this trade was not done by two general managers. This trade was done by two owners. This is Columbus saying, get this out of here. If we're going to pay this money, we want to see it on the ice. Thank you very much. And this was Rogers and Bell saying, money means nothing. If we're rebuilding, get us cap space. This is an owner's trade. Like, you're right. There are so many layers to this one that it's remarkable. And to see people on Twitter, mainly from out west, saying, "Oh, I can't believe the wall to wall coverage this thing is getting," you fail to grasp the depths at which this trade, like the different rungs of the ladder you can climb up and down on this trade. It's a remarkable deal. It's a remarkable. Now, here's a right before the podcast, I was talking to Bob Mackowitz, buddy, and he asked me a great question. And I'm going to ask you the same question that he just asked me. If Brian Burke were still running the Maple Leafs, does this deal get done? Mm. Or is it against the spirit of the CBA?
Does it circumvent the CBA? That's a really great question.
Isn't it?
That's a really great question, yeah.
If it's not Dave Nonis, if it's Brian Burke, is this one still getting done? Because we saw him, I mean, he testified on behalf of the NHL against backdiving deals. Something you could have made the argument the Maple Leafs should have been doing because they had the financial wherewithal to do so. Refuse to use that money as a resource. This is using money as a resource to buy cap space. If Burke is running the team, does this still get done? What a hell of a question. It's a hypothetical. And there's no real answer unless you ask Brian about it. But it's an interesting thing to ponder. If it's the old regime, I don't know if this deal gets done.
I don't know either. That's a really, really good point. That's a really, really good point. Can we pretend that the GM has made the trade? Though?
Okay, sure. Yeah, okay. Let's do it.
Because I really like the idea of ring, ring.
I have an idea here.
Hello, Dave. This is Yarmo. A crazy thought.
Okay, wait a minute. First of all, now that we've seen his press conference, everyone has seen his press conference. You know he doesn't speak like that now. So now that impression is a fraud.
I don't know if you've been paying attention, but...
Oh, jeez.
We have a problem on our hands. His name is Nathan. He's got the most terrible back. Now, I understand you have a man named David who also has really had a terrible back, carrying the weight and expectations of all of the Leafs fans on him for so many times. Crazy thought, David. Crazy thought. What if we made a little swap? Maybe if I give you my guy who doesn't play and you give me your guy who you don't want to play... maybe we work it out?
Why would you want to make this trade?
I don't know if they have this in this country. They have it back in Finland. Ever hear of insurance?
Here's
the
thing.
We did not get it on this contract. And, you know, end result, after all the lawyers look at it, end result is we would be paying him for nothing. We would be paying him to be able to watch satellite TV in his home in Florida. So maybe we pay someone to do something, and then you ask your big-time multimedia people who own the team to pay someone to do nothing, kind of like what they do for you already.
Oh, jeez. You know what? Here's the thing about this trade, too, Wish. It's not done yet. The Maple Leafs have a resource now. Now, all of a sudden, you have the ability, you've created the ability to take on a bad contract and something along with it. Right? Hey, Team X, you have a bad contract you want off your books? We have the cap space for it, but it's going to cost you a first-round pick. Or it's going to cost you this prospect. But we can help you wiggle out of your financial situation, given what's happening to the salary cap next year, as long as you make it, you know, put enough sugar in the coffee here for MLS&E, i.e. prospect and pick.
And you know what's funny? It's like, listen, I honestly don't know what Nonis was responsible for here. As far as we know, according to Chris Johnston, the Blue Jackets came to the Leafs with this idea. They were the catalyst for it. For all we know, it's just Shanahan signing off on this thing and then Nonis doing the lip service on it. Who the hell knows? But I do know this about general managing. We get so hung up on the concept of mistakes that sometimes we don't give enough credit to general managers who make mistakes disappear. Now, there are two ways to make this mistakes disappear. There's the Lou Lamoriello way, which is to find loopholes in the CBA and yep. find ways to make players and mistakes disappear in the minor leagues, overseas, in the Pine Barrens, tied to a weight and thrown into the swamp. I don't know where.
Yep.
But that's one way to make it disappear. The other way to make it disappear is if you are the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs or, more famously, until recently, the New York Rangers. Well, you make money. You make the problems disappear with money. Wade Redden or Chris Drury or other things like that. You make them disappear with money. But the bottom line is that because the Rangers made their problems disappear over time, and they had a number of them. Remember, the Rangers used to be the poster boys for bad contracts.
Oh, dude, up around $100 million and couldn't make the playoffs.
Made the Stanley Cup Finals last year. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It is to the Leafs' credit that they made this problem disappear. They only were able to do it because they are owned by the two companies that own Canada. Okay, fair enough. But they made it disappear. And you know, I heard someone say this about Nonis yesterday, and I agree. It did kind of feel like the dude had the weight of the world lifted for like a second. Like I said on the blog today, it's as if Sisyphus was given 10 minutes. Yeah, I got the boulder. You go get yourself a coffee or a little back massage or something over in Koreatown. I'll do the boulder for now for like 10 minutes. That's what it felt like with Nonis yesterday. And as a guy who has been as much or more of a punching bag than Dave Clarkson in that town, I kind of felt good for him for a second.
It was pretty fun in the press conference when he was asked about, you know, Nathan Horton, the player, and him ever playing again, and how David had the tap dance. You know, like, we really didn't do this just for cap space. We really didn't do this to create cap space to, you know, maybe alleviate bad contracts from other teams in exchange for picks and prospects. Trying to dance around the real reason why this thing was done. You know, was your first thought when this deal was done? My first thought was, how incensed is the NHL at this? That here's another loophole that contravenes the quote-unquote spirit of the CBA. Like, weren't you waiting for that moment, Greg, yesterday where the Bill Daly press release moment where the trade had been voided because it violated the spirit of the CBA? I was waiting. I'm like, okay, this is pretty creative, and everyone's going cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs on Twitter, and it's fun. And then you find out about, you know, Portsline tweets the stuff about the insurance, and that adds a whole other new wrinkle into all this. And this is becoming a really interesting story. The whole time I'm checking my iPhone, I'm like, okay, where's the press release from Bill Daly explaining why this isn't going to go through?
There was a part of me that was wondering about it, but there were two considerations I had that made me think it wasn't going to happen. The first consideration was the fact that, unlike Chris Pronger, who was walking around in a business suit, never looking to play again, and the only person who ever walks around in a business suit and does play again is Triple H, because he plays the game, you see.
Oh, yes, very good.
But you had these quotes from Nathan Horton earlier this season in Portsline's column.
Yeah,
in the
hinting
Columbus
at
Dispatch,
playing. Yeah.
Hinting at playing. Like, having a genuine desire to play without anything nefarious or underhanded or at play beyond a player telling a reporter, I feel terrible about this, all I want to do is play hockey, and I'm not going to have surgery in the hopes that there is some way I could get back and play. So when a player is like that, it's hard for me to look at this situation and be like, it is complete cap circumvention, even though we all know he probably is never going to play again. There's at least this determination by the guy involved that he wants to play again. The other thing that I thought about too is, you know, the NHL in theory should be the cop on the beat when it comes to teams trying to get around the rules and find competitive imbalance, trying to screw other teams over, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you have a team in the Leafs that they obviously want to do well. I mean, they don't want the Leafs to be a dumpster fire. They want them to do well. They make more money when they do well.
Players the same way.
So, yeah. So, right, exactly. So, in the case of the Leafs, they have a team that they are fine with the idea of them getting out from under a bad contract and doing better. And they know that they're not going to take a financial hit. They can absorb the financial hit of Horton. And then they have another team that they clearly love in Columbus that now is able to take the money they were going to spend on an asset that was never going to hit the ice and at least spend that money on a warm body.
You know what's lost in a lot of this, I think, Greg?
What's that?
Nathan Horton did a solid for two franchises here because he had to waive. So in the process of waiving, he helped Columbus and he helped the Maple Leafs. Didn't have to waive.
He did.
He did a solid for two franchises here. For both. Like, the guy should not have to buy a drink in either Columbus or Toronto for the rest of his life.
You know, I once tried to use that line on Bobby Orr.
Yeah, how well did that part of the interview go?
Didn't go well at all.
Yeah, not
you mean, that part of the interview, do you mean the beginning?
Did you lead with that?
It was my icebreaker. It was my. Hey, great career. Bet you never have to. Blah blah blah.
I don't drink.
Oh no, it was more than that. he basically called me Stuttering John. I mean, that's pretty much how it was. It was pretty.
But
great.
I mean, but good for Nathan Horton and all this. And you may say to yourself, like, well, okay, what the deal? Like, he's gonna get his money anyway. But he didn't have to waive. This was a thank you to Columbus for the contract, and I'm sure he would. I mean, no one wants to go through a Nathan Horton. Like, if he has spinal fusion surgery, I can't imagine the rest of his life. Like, I know it's a lot of money and all that, but that is a thank you to Columbus. And it's also a consideration to Toronto. Like, he helped two franchises significantly by just saying, okay.
Yeah, no kidding. I think that, like I said, it's a trade that I love on several levels. And mostly the fact that it just solved so many problems in one fell swoop, and it made Nonis look good, and it made Kekalainen continue to look good. It gets, and here's the thing about Clarkson, right? Like, and as a Devils fan who watched him, you know, come into this league and grow up as a power forward,
needs structure.
He needs a tight structure, and he, I mean, God, if there's any way to get him, you know, some hire Pete DeBoer to sit in the locker next to him before every game, maybe. And he doesn't need the bullshit that comes with that contract and the bullshit that comes with those expectations. Yeah. Going home was a stupid idea. And,
it's
and
not,
I know
listen,
that there's always
it's not the first time. Look at how many, and this, I mean, Sheldon Surrey, Joffrey Leupold, Edmondson, like, doesn't always work. I know a lot of people will tell you, you know, fill the local team with the local boys. It doesn't always work at all. And then when it doesn't work, it really doesn't work.
You know, it's right, and like the thing, but it's tough because when it came to Clarkson, there was a clear chasing of the money, but there was also money on the table from other places that would have given him as much or more. Edmonton, for example, was going to probably give him more money.
I think it was
right?
Like six sheets, I think.
Sure. So there, part of this, and he talked about this today on his phone call, was this idea of going home, putting on the jersey, dad gets to see you in the jersey. Happiest day of his time as a Leaf was the day he signed that contract, he said.
Yep.
You know, put on that jersey. His dad had tears in his eyes looking at his baby boy from Toronto, putting on that jersey and looking like a Leaf. And it's hard for me to sit here and be like he chased the money when you have that whole aspect of it as well. But he did go home, and you can't go home again sometimes. So here's what I really hope for David Clarkson. I hope he settles into whatever role they have for him in Columbus. I hope that Aaron Portsline, who is the Columbus media, never asks him about the contract. I hope the Columbus Dispatch never puts him on the front cover with Scott Hartnell hair or whatever the hell they do. It would be the commissioner of the Wendell Clark mustache. I hope none of that happens, and I hope he just gets a chance to play hockey and find his game again, because the guy that I saw in Toronto was not the guy I saw in Jersey at all. And I know he's got it in him to be a good player again, at least for a couple of years. I mean, he was, after all, 30 when they signed under that contract, wasn't he?
Yes, indeed. And, I mean, you know how much I like David Clarkson, the player, and how much I like David Clarkson, the person. And I love that local boy goes home story. And it was a great moment for that family. Did it work out? Not even close. Not even close. Just got off to a bad start in that brawl with the Buffalo Sabres, and he just couldn't get the car out of the garage after that.
Yeah.
Not that that had all of it to do with it, but still, he just couldn't get out of the garage. He couldn't. But I don't believe, look at this, I don't believe that Clarkson is consistently that 30-goal guy that we saw in New Jersey, but I also don't think he's that guy we saw in Toronto.
No, I don't think so either.
I think he's here's the question. Somewhere in between it.
Steve Simmons playing down the fact that his newspaper put Clarkson on the cover and compared him to Wendell Clark. Question whether or not he was the worst Maple Leaf of all time. I don't know if there's a way to really quantify that, so I'll spin off that question and ask you, do you think he's the worst Maple Leaf signing of all time?
Signing is fair. I don't know about player. If anyone saw Paul Higgins play, you wouldn't say David Clarkson. Maddie says Jeff
Ooh,
Finger.
Jeff, yeah, Maddie Jeff says Finger. Jeff Finger. That's a
Maddie
very good one
Maddie chimes in on
too.
Jeff Finger.
Yeah.
That would have to be up there as well. Yeah, that was a Cliff Fletcher signing. Oh, that was bad. Eesh. As far as contract, off the top of my head, I can't think of one that was worse. Finger would be in consideration. Ooh, who's worse?
Yeah, I don't think Jeff Finger might be the only one I can think of, and he was just a mess.
Jason Blake.
Ooh, that's a good one too. It's a real good one.
Those are the only ones coming to mind for
yeah.
me.
Yeah, Clarkson might be it. Might be D Clarkson.
Toskula was a trade, right?
Vesa Toskala was a trade, yeah.
Yeah.
He was a great goalie.
Jeez, ask Rob Davidson.
Yeah, right. Oh, Jesus. 97 feet? What, 197
feet? 197 there? Feet. 97 would be generous.
Yeah, 97 would be generous.
Hey, good goal.
All right.
Snipe show.
The other deal that happened yesterday that we should probably talk about is the Jágr deal.
I know.
Florida.
How you taking
Florida.
It? Jágr is no longer a member of your New Jersey Devils.
I'm taking it fine. I mean, it was clear that he didn't want to be there, and it was clear that Adam Oates, for whatever reason, didn't want him to be there. I mean, the ice time was super low. Florida is a very interesting landing place for a couple of the reasons. The first, obviously, being that there is no personal income tax in Florida. I mean, come on now. Yeah. Was it your first thought?
Well, there also isn't any in Dallas. They kill you on property tax. But still, as far as state income tax is zero.
Right.
And he was in Dallas, too, now that I think about it. Of course.
He was in Dallas, too.
Well done, Jaromir.
The other thing. But the Dallas thing was also on my mind when it came to this deal because look, ooh, sneezies.
Sorry about that.
There's no separating the Panthers from the reality of their surroundings, and their surroundings are empty seats.
At the same time, and the thing is, this isn't a move to go deep in the playoffs. This is a move to get to the playoffs.
Get to the
and
playoffs.
When you look what Boston's going through right now with David Krejci and trying to hunt for a winger and the team spiraling, Florida's got a shot. You have to do it.
They have a shot, but don't you think that there are other younger, cheaper solutions than Jágr? I don't separate the fact that listen, it's all a bunch of snowbirds and expat Northeasterners.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
All love Jágr.
What, okay.
Now you come to the arena to see Jágr. It's I think it's a gate decision along with it being a hockey decision, personally.
If it is part of a gate decision, then good for them for putting some butts in the seats. But there are two players specifically, Jacob Voracek and Claude Giroux. What did they both say about Jágr when he was in Philadelphia? No one had a greater influence on my career than Jágr.
The best work ethic, the guy that showed them the way without question. That's why Edmonton coveted him for years to be that guy in Edmonton, too. Yeah, for sure.
And so you look at whether he's going to play with Huberdeau and Barkov or Jimmy Hayes and Nick Bjugstad. He's going to help those kids. And this is made for one reason. Shore up the right side and get in the playoffs. That's it. He's not there for a long playoff run because we've seen what happens to Yager when a team goes on a long playoff run. Hello, Boston Bruins. That tempo goes up significantly, and he can't keep up. He can't anymore.
Hubert,
but
though.
This is just to get there.
Jonathan Hubert, though. No, it is. Hey, listen, the Devils pulled a second-round pick out of their conditional third for
Florida gets a pick back. They'll trade Fleischman and get a second. Watch.
Yeah, right. They probably will. But hey, it's a pretty good deal for the Devs getting that pick.
Sure.
And it's a good place for Yager. It's interesting that, you know, he talked about playing in a place where that would maybe be a bit of a cup contender. I'm not quite sure if Florida's there, but
It's just to get there.
But getting over the hump perspective, it's a good little move for them.
And you know what it is? It's a shot in the arm for all those kids that have worked so hard all year long. When a general manager goes out and does that, doesn't touch your roster and brings in a player that's going to help you. Or you think and hope he is going to help you.
That's a great point. And
that's a reward.
You know, don't discount that when you start to see some of these deals come down in the next couple of days. Because Dean Lombardi did the very same thing with Sequeira. It was an acknowledgement that his team had gotten themselves back into the race and into a playoff spot. It was an acknowledgement that this team has proven time and time again that they are going to be in it to win it if they make the playoffs. And it's him saying, look, you know, the circumstances are what they are with our blue line. I'm going to go out and make this deal. I'm going to give up a first round pick for this cat, even though he may not be here next year. And I'm doing it because you guys have shown me that you deserve it.
And that's
I agree with you. I think Talon made the same kind of deal now with this Yager deal. I completely agree with you on that.
This is the reward. And as far as the Sequeira deal goes, hang on a second here. Quick little cough. The Sequeira deal, that's a Mike Fiuta deal because he had him in Owen Sound in the OHL.
Right, in Owen
really
Sound.
Really familiar
right.
with the kid, so I shouldn't say kid anymore. Really familiar with Sequeira, so that one fits. Some have called him a poor man's Voinov. I don't know.
Well, let's hope not.
Yeesh. I know.
That's really a compliment anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. Talk about on the ice.
On the ice. Okay, yeah, well. No, it's a good deal for them. In fact, I think it's a really good deal for them, especially considering the top round, the first round pick's a lottery protected one. What are your thoughts about, I mean, I don't know what our deal is for next week with the show and the trade deadline, all that jive. We can do a later show on Monday after you've popped all your
champagne
with us.
I'm off the air at 6.
You're off the air at 6. Yeah, well, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out something because I know that.
Yeah, we won't have a studio then.
We won't have a studio?
No, not at
Maddie says we won't have a studio.
No, what a fucking.
Can we find one? We'll talk about it over the weekend.
What's your barometer right now? What are you preparing for? What are you thinking about vis-a-vis the trade deadline on Monday and your level of... First of all, can I ask you a question about Sportsnet?
Of course.
I don't know how candid you could be. Why aren't they doing the old GM's room again, man?
They're doing a variation of it, but it's not called the strategy room. I love that room. And we're talking about that last...
I loved it, too. I thought it was one of my favorite things.
Yeah, I know. We're doing a variation of it on the upper regional set on Monday. But see, what I loved about the strategy room was the way it was shot. Like, the way it was shot, no one outside of host, and that's just for the welcome back viewer, and then take you to break, no one looked at a camera. And all the shots were over the shoulder. So you had the perspective of almost a keyhole viewer. You're in there looking into a boardroom with general managers around the table, either telling stories about how trades came together, how trades messed up. Stories about players, stories about themselves, like great roundtable stuff. And the POV was something you're not used to, which is people not talking to camera. Anytime you put an over-the-shoulder shot in a show, you kind of get the impression that you're watching / listening to something that you're not supposed to be. And that's what I loved about that room from that perspective. That's just how it was shot for TV. We are doing a variation of that. They're calling it like the analyst's room or something like that. Yeah, it's the analyst's room. So it's, who am I in there with? I am in there with Doug McClain, Glenn Healy, Craig Simpson. I think Darren Pang is in that one with me as well. But then they have us doing some stuff on the floor, sort of roaming all around the studio. But I would have loved to have done the actual strategy room again. But for
whatever
reason.
Is this because of the joke that Gordon and I made last year that made McClain so angry?
the Dead GM's Room? What was it called?
The Dead GM's Room.
Funny thing is, I think Gord made the joke, and you ended up getting screamed at for it.
He totally made the joke, and I got screamed at it.
Waiting for Doug. You should, honestly, you should have heard Mac yesterday about the Clarkson deal. He was livid.
About what?
At the deal.
About circumvention?
No, not about circumvention. I mean, from a general manager's point of view, that's tough to go to your boss and say, I need a check for $26 million. And he told me, he goes, I can't remember who the player was. I said, who's the most you had to ever go ask your owner to buy out in Columbus? He goes, I had to buy 2 years of, oh, I can't remember who it was. He had to buy 2 years of someone, and the price tag was $900,000, and his owner killed him for it. He said, I can't imagine Dave Notis saying, we need to eat $26 million. See, because from a GM's point of view, too, like, you brought this point up early in the podcast. That's Dave Notis, to be crude about it, cleaning up a mess that he made.
That he made.
And going to ownership and saying, it's going to take $26 million to clean up this mess that I made. So he's looking at it very much from a general manager's point of view, like, how do you do that?
Great.
How do you go and ask for $26 million?
Well, I mean, it's simple. You walk into whatever darkened boardroom that you, the Bell and Rogers Illuminati live in when they're making Leafs decisions.
Well, that's
you go up in front of the panel,
dude,
and you say, I need $26 million.
That's why.
And then someone waves their hand and says, take it from petty cash.
That's take it from the tip jar. That's why I think that this, more than any other trade that you have seen this year or will see coming up on Monday, was ownership to ownership. The people in front of the cameras are the two general managers, but this is an owner's trade. This is Columbus saying, we're not spending $6 million to watch this guy in the stands. If we're going to spend $6 million, I want to see someone on the ice. And the Maple Leafs saying, we can do that because we can apply that to LTI and we can use the cap space to get other assets. And somewhere down the road, you know, when this team, because they're not going to be a cap team next year. That's folly. But when they are a cap team again, all of a sudden now they have the Horton contract and they can go that much above.
My original question was going to be, what level of activity do you think is going to be actually on deadline day? We're starting
to see trades
trickle in.
Yeah.
There's a couple of guys that you know are going to get moved. You know that Petrie's getting moved. You know Vermette's getting moved.
Jokinen's going to get moved.
Jokinen, there's a few other ones that you know are going to get moved. So we have some guarantees.
Yeah.
But what level of activity overall do you think we're going to see?
I think it's going to be, I mean, we'll see what happens on the weekend and which general managers pull triggers. I think Phoenix will be aggressive. I think you'll see Vermette moved. I think you'll see Yandel moved. And I think you'll see...
You think we'll see Yandel moved,
I think we'll see Yandel move. And I think we'll see Sam Gagne moved either to Chicago or Boston.
Now, do you think that that Yandel moves to Boston? Because they're an obvious dance partner. I think that you could find a workable trade if you decide to flip Torrey Krug in the trade, which I think would be a suggested remedy for the Bruins in this situation.
Krug hasn't
a nice upgrade for them.
He hasn't had the best year. He hasn't had. The
best. Yeah, I don't. I there might be a cap to how good he's going to be, and you know what you get with Yandel. Do you think it'd be Boston, or do you think it'd be somewhere else?
Well, who's looking for a defenseman? Oh, yeah, everybody.
Everybody.
That's the thing. Everybody's looking for a defenseman. So, like, that's the thing about this one. Like, who saw Clarkson for Nathan Horton coming yesterday? Nobody. Do we expect more jaw droppers? Probably.
There's trades that we didn't think. Yager to Florida is a jaw dropper.
Jaw dropper as well. And who knows, man? It may be, you know, us and TSN just spinning plates and, hey, let's go to the demo wall and watch. Kiprios is going to take shots on Panger for, 10 hours. Who knows? Who knows what it's going to be like? We've seen before that trade deadline, the actual day itself, sometimes is more a tweak than trade. But there's some names out
there. The two X factors in this whole thing are McDavid and the cap. McDavid in the sense that you're going to see a lot of deals like LA just struck where if there is a first rounder in play and if you're going to pull off a blockbuster, you're going to have to trade a first. That's how it works. You're going to see lottery protection, and you're going to see teams overall going to be very hesitant to give up a one anyway in this draft. And then if we're dealing with a $69 million cap, which is what a couple of GMs are preparing for, according to Elliot Friedman, well, that's also an interesting wrinkle because it could go one of two ways. It could be teams not willing to take on longer-term deals. Guys like Joffrey Lupul, for example, have a few years left, not wanting to take that money on because of the cap situation. Or It could force a team like the Rangers, for example, to deal a player like Matt Zuccarello, for example, because they don't want to have to deal with that in the offseason with the cap dropping or not growing all that much.
That's why a player like Sam Gagner is attractive, because Tampa's still picking up a piece of the contract for the trade. And if you saw last night with Phoenix, I mean, what's the one thing that Dave Tippett hasn't done with Sam Gagner this year, because he doesn't like the way he plays defensively? Hasn't put him in prime spots. What did he do yesterday? Who's in the position to get two power play goals early in that game yesterday? Oh, look, it's Sam Gagner. Like yesterday was all about, in a lot of ways, that game I'm watching. I'm like, this is the Sam Gagner showcase.
By the way, we didn't mention the fact that almost the most inexplicable part of this entire Clarkson deal was that they don't have to pay any money for him. Did you ever, maybe some of us envisioned a scenario in which David Clarkson could be traded from the Leafs. Did any of those scenarios not involve the Leafs retaining salary?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I mean, God damn. Like LeBron mentioned that Ottawa might have been in on Clarkson. What do you think that phone call was like between the Leafs and the Sens? The Sens saying, well, you know, we were thinking maybe 5/6 of the salary.
Yeah.
The Leafs are like, what? How about three quarters?
4.5 per year, and we'll relieve you of the burden of David Clarkson.
They're like, how about 2/3, and then you throw in like a box at the ACC?
Yeah, I know. There were no, but then again, like, I should probably just stop saying the immovable contract. Because until there's the next lockout and they tie up this little loophole, you can still move contracts.
That's truth, though. I mean, like I remember reading a piece by Myrtle that said that this was a buyout-proof contract because of how it was structured.
Yeah, not so much.
And people said that it was untradeable.
Yeah.
And so, lo and behold, you can...
Then the latest reports have the Maple Leafs now looking to acquire both Mark Savard and Chris Pronger. The next thing the Maple Leafs are going after.
All right. Do you think FNUF gets traded?
I think he does eventually. I don't know that he does now. Okay. I think that's a summer or draft trade, but I think he goes. Although comes back yesterday, broken paw, scores a goal, boom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a different team. They beat the Philadelphia Flyers. But I think he's gone.
Will Chicago make a significant move to replace Patrick Kane, or will Chicago make a smaller move to replace Patrick Kane?
I think they will be chasing Antoine Vermette all weekend. They will chase him all over the ice like the St. Louis Blues chased Eddie Shack. That's what they will be doing all weekend long. That's what I think. Or Sam Gagner. But the thing about Gagner is he has one more year on term. We know what's going to happen to the Blackhawks. Oh, man, it's not that much. And if you can get... Actually, you know what? If you can get Arizona to pick up part of the contract again to move Gagner out, then he may just end up being the most interesting piece all weekend / Monday. I can see him in Chicago.
The Sharks do? What do you think the Sharks do?
Holy smokes. Okay, I was thinking until yesterday where Antti Niemi. Did you see that second period yesterday? How good was Antti Niemi yesterday in that second period?
Play out of his mind.
He was amazing yesterday in that second period.
He was.
I thought they'll be fishing for a goaltender. I still think they fish for a goaltender because I'm not sure they're sold on either of them, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that goaltender is Jonathan Bernier. I don't know. But the candidates to be moved, right? It's not exactly the bumper crop of guys that are going to fetch you something handsome. So it'll be Andrew Desjardins, who I think is a really good fourth line center. Andrew Desjardins, Tyler Kennedy, Scott Hannon. It'll be those types of players. I know. But the thing is, people will be trying to fish players like Matt Nieto, who's only scored, four goals this year for San Jose. Tomas Hertl has only scored 10. They'll be trying to fish those guys out of San Jose. But I don't know if Doug Wilson's going to bite. But he's got to do something. He's got to do something, man. Honestly, I don't know. We were talking about that yesterday around the shop. Like, if you look at the goaltending market, where is it for trade deadline?
Right. As far as need?
No, as far as available. Who's available?
Maybe somebody from Ottawa?
Maybe. Well, what do you do if you're Ottawa now? All of a sudden, you strung together how many wins in a row?
If you were the San Jose Sharks, would you make a push for Craig Anderson?
100%.
Yeah, that's not a bad fit there.
100%. If you're Doug
the
Wilson,
if you played in the West before,
you're Doug Wilson, and you can't like if you thought it was bad last year when they bowed out in the first round, surrendering, losing four games in a row to the Los Angeles Kings. Try not making the playoffs. Like, how mad was Doug Wilson last year?
We haven't spoken since the Devils blew their chance.
Against Calgary Flames? How good was Johnny Gaudreau in that game?
He was great.
He didn't get on the score sheet, but damn, he was good all game long. That'd be the best game he's played since Christmas.
And I'll say this about Kari Ramo, man. I was wrong.
He was great. He was great.
Never thought Ramo was going to be an NHL netminder, but he's been freaking great this year. Yeah. They both have been.
Mm-hmm. Now.
Sucks. But now we're talking about upper body injury to potential MVP Mark Giordano. This sucks.
We'll see. Well, they haven't updated. Have they updated yet? I haven't seen that they've updated on the sport. I think they're
just
supposed to today.
Upper body, nebulous upper body injury of some mystery.
Yeah.
Not playing tonight.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. I talked to someone yesterday. They said they were hoping for a sprain.
What, a sprained brain? A brain sprain? Upper
shoulder,
body injury.
Shoulder. Shoulder. You saw that. It was Bernier that put the stick in there, right? It's a hell of a play. Hell of a play.
Yeah.
God, did it look painful.
Oh, yeah.
Did it look painful, though? Going to side. Mm-hmm. When you look at the windup that Giordano had on that slap shot around the boards, and just to have Bernier wedge in his stick, there's a beautiful play by Bernier. You can just imagine that force of the shoulder collapsing. Oh man, like I watched it. Those injuries where you just kind of cringe when you see them? Oh, that was it for me. I'm like, I can't imagine the force at which he's
That's every
that
injury
slap
for me.
Yeah, anything into the boards. I know when the guys go accordion and then they pop up. I'm like, what the hell?
But speaking of injuries, I mean, obviously this podcast is dedicated to the
my upper body injury
to Jeff Merrick. Yeah,
my upper body injury.
And his ability to play through pain. Mandeep writes in that you have a Dave Nonis trading Clarkson level of heroism. John Cazera writes in that you're the hero the podcast deserves, but not the one it needs right now.
Wow.
And then hashtags at Dark Suit Night. Dark Suit.
I'm glad people got the Dark Suit reference, and it continues. Much as
Neil Blair hashtags it, I am Gregory Campbell.
He blocked a shot, broke his leg in the playoffs. I showed up for a podcast with the sniffles. Yeah, me, Gregory Campbell, Terry Fox. Yeah, we're all cut from the same.
Brian Palmer writes in your Mike. This is about a couple of the bad Leaf signings. Mike Craig in the 1990s cost Zezel and Grant Marshall in compensation, and then Dr. Hykan writes in Komisarek was a terrible signing. The Leafs have had some really bad ones. Komisarek was a good one we forgot about.
Yeah, that's right.
For sure.
That's a good one.
All right, Maddie, I think we'll probably dial up a Friday favorite now. I happen to think that the trade deadline is going to be quieter than the first couple of days may portend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I hope not for
listen,
all of our sakes.
If it is, selfishly, then...
what is this noise?
I don't know. Maddie's trolling it off. He doesn't want to do game show.
You don't want to do game show, Maddie?
No, that's Maddie's way of telling you to take a flying F at a rolling donut.
What a dick.
I know. So... If it is a slow day, selfishly, that's great for me.
Did you send me the game show contestant?
Because I'm in
Yeah,
the,
I totally did.
Yeah. Yeah, we sent it. Greg sent it over to you.
Yeah, did you not get it, bud? You could try to resend it.
I'm trying to make a point about my broadcasting career over here.
Sorry.
If it's a slow day, that's great for my room because it's just going to be, okay, guys, tell stories. I would just sit around and tell stories in my room and the breaking news desk will twiddle their thumbs and grow cobwebs.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. I'm going to send it again to Maddie. This would have never happened if we were in the chat like we're supposed to be.
When's the last time we were actually in the chat? Feel back.
We haven't been in the chat in a long time. Of course, like now it's like I'm in my parents' basement, the wood paneled basement, and the wood paneling in the basement prevents the internet from ever working. It's a miracle that we've been able to. Oh, I'm not even going to fucking say.
Where are you right? You're at your parents' place right now?
I just jinxed it.
Oh yeah. Now we're going off here. You're driving this podcast in the ditch. You're done.
Yeah, I'm at my parents. Vivian's in town.
Nice.
So I took her to see Grandma and Grandpa. Sweet. Papa Mustache, as my dad is known. Speaking of my dad, I got me and Ruby and my dad are going to go to the unable to connect to your mail right now. That's solid.
That's awesome.
Me, Ruby, and my dad are going to the 1995 New Jersey Devils.
Oh, the reunion.
Reunion celebration against the Flyers. Cool. Which is going to be a ton of fun. And here, I'm going to send it from my phone.
Hopefully. Hang on. Have you met Bobby Holík in person?
I don't know if I've ever met Holík in person.
Okay,
actually.
I'll hook you up with Bobby. You'll love him.
Yeah. No, you'll love him. Spoke on the phone. But yeah, it'll be fun and a good bit of nostalgia and all that jive, so it'll be a good time. But I put this out on Twitter the other day, and I wanted to see what you think about it. Don't you think that every writer and every broadcaster should have to purchase tickets at least once a season to understand the plight of the common man? Like, these Devils tickets are not great Devils tickets. They're like, I mean, they're good. They're center ice, but they're like second tier. It is a pricey. I never give shit to fans who throw stuff on the ice or make their voices be heard. Yeah. Because every time a writer looks down their nose, we're writing for the Hockey News, and bemoans the fact that a fan is doing what they do, I say to myself, when was the last time,
you
sir,
yeah.
that you actually plunked down a credit card and said, give me three or give me four, and then didn't die of a heart attack when you got the bill?
Well, here's what I always do. I always say the same thing. When I see someone criticizing the game, I always ask myself one question, or ask that person one question. If we made the changes that you wanted, would you buy a ticket? If the answer is yes, I will take you seriously. If the answer is no, please don't bother me.
Family of four. Four good tickets, some chow at the game, parking. It is. We always talk about the cost of the game vis-a-vis the cost it takes to play it, and the cost it takes to get into it, and the cost it takes to, you know, get your kid in the right travel program.
Yep.
It is now. It costs probably more just to watch it, which is insane. But that's the reality of our surroundings, and it's not every city. I mean, it is. It is obviously, you know, you can find affordable tickets in a lot of markets.
I paid, what was it? Let's see. A couple weeks ago on Family Day, I took the kids, Claire and her friend, to see the Stouffville Spirits play the Wellington Dukes. Had to pay for Claire and her friend, so that was $20. So that the kids in for free, and I bought a season's pass for $50
right.
at the beginning of the year. So, yeah, I feel the pain. Yeah. Oh, I feel the pain.
No, I know. And like I said, you know, there's lots of other hockey outside of the NHL, and people always make the case, well, you can go see the Steam Pipers.
Oh, man, they got steam piped against Kingston last night. Oh, boy, too. Game one of the playoffs, too. They sucked it last night, boy.
All right, listen. That's my rant about cost. It's now time for a Friday favorite.
It's Game Show Friday!
Chris Bentivenga, did I get that right? Chris? You there, bud?
Yeah.
Hello? Ah!
What are you doing?
Chris, did I get your name right? I said Bentivenga.
That's close enough.
What is it really?
I mean, it's Italian, so I've Americanized it to Bentivenga, but I'm sure it's supposed to be Bentivenga.
Bentivenga!
There we go.
Chris showed some moxie. Chris emailed in before we ever said boo about Game Show Friday and said,
cool.
Noon has come and gone and no Twitter post has gone up asking for Game Show Friday victims. Was my choice to postpone my trip to the gym for an opportunity to be on Game Show Friday this day after Lamageddon in vain? And I'll tell you, Chris, it was not in vain. Anybody who makes the decision not to get healthy in order to try to be on this bullshit game show, I think, deserves a shot, don't they?
Well, Greg, I mean, I'm not saying I'm not going to go get healthy, but I was trying to put it off to maybe just have that one chance at glory.
Well, you disappoint me. Chris, two questions. What was your thoughts on Lamageddon yesterday?
Oh, it was captivating. It was absolutely captivating, just sitting there at your laptop watching the llamas run for glory. And the white llama could have got away, but it had to go back for its friend. I'm convinced for that. So
that's right.
Still going to be together in captivity.
And people treat it like it's a huge deal, but honestly, that's every Thursday in Stouffville. And then the other question I have for you, Chris, is obviously the question we have not asked in the podcast, but we will right now. White and gold or black and blue?
So I saw it as white and gold. But then I guess the retailer said today that it was a blue and black dress. So sadly, I think it has to be a PR stunt by that company to sell more of what is, most people are telling me, and my girlfriend said as well, an ugly dress.
Merrick, did you look at the dress?
I did last night. Like most things in popular culture, I missed it as it was actually happening.
What did you see?
I saw the blue.
Wow. I saw white and gold the entire time.
Not me.
And I was driving back up from Virginia with Vivi, and we got home. And the entire time during the day, Ruby and I had been texting, and she said, you saw the dress. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, what did you see? And I said, white and gold. She's like, you're shitting me. I'm like, no. She's like, you didn't see blue and black. I'm like, no. She goes, why are you trying to make this a joke on me like the rest of society? Like, do you think this is some elaborate prank at your expense? And then I bought Vivi home, and without, she had no knowledge of this whatsoever, opened up my laptop, said, come on over, kid. Like 5 years old. I said, what do you see? And she's like, white and gold, white and yellow. I'm like, all right, there you go. I don't know what this all means. Okay. My theory is this is some sort of a test to weed out the alien DNA in the human race.
Oh.
And the blue and blacks are somehow being identified as cosmic invaders.
Oh.
But I don't know what it all means, but I definitely did not see blue and black. I saw blue and black like twice. Like when I glanced at it, but like show me the picture now, and it's white and gold. It's the freakiest optical illusion I've ever seen.
I see blue and black every time. And I just saw it again this morning. Yeah, blue and black.
Chris is a member of Mason Nation. That's exciting. And now you are here on Game Show Friday. You know the rules. We give you five rounds, three categories each round. You choose the questions. If you get three right, then you win the big prize that Maddie will send you. Are you ready to play Game Show Friday, sir?
I am, and Jeff, I understand with your sickness you could have easily skipped Game Show Friday, so I think secretly you love it.
I think you're right. this is how much respect I have for it, no matter how sniffly I may be, you know, how many times I turn my microphone off and sneeze into my arm. I do love Game Show Friday like nothing else. And I can't wait to hear you dazzle us, Chris.
Chris was raised in New England. Whereabouts in New England were you raised, Chris?
A little town called Southborough, Massachusetts. It's like central Mass, halfway between Worcester and Boston.
So we're doing Boston Bruins trip then?
We got a little Boston Bruins
trivia. I am a Boston
trivia.
Bruins fan, yes.
Bruins fan?
And looking forward to hopefully angering some Capitals fans. What is it, March 15th? Yeah, March 15th.
Oh, he knows the date and everything. That's very exciting.
Good.
All right, sir. Game Show Friday with a few Boston questions peppered in for your liking. We begin the first round with these three choices as my computer skips and stones and gets ready. Okay, here we go. These three choices: Boston Bruins brutality, third jerseys, or NHL records. Boston Bruins brutality, third jerseys, or NHL records.
Let's start with third jerseys.
Third jerseys. Which of the following teams has never worn a third jersey during the third jersey era of the last 25 years? Who does not have official third jersey? Are they the Vancouver Canucks, the Washington Capitals, the Detroit Red Wings, or the Chicago Blackhawks?
Ooh. No, it's not the first two. Because Vancouver had the Johnny Canuck jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I would. So are we not counting Stadium Series jerseys or Winter Classic jerseys? Because then both the last
those are not third those are not those are not third jerseys unless the team adopted them as third jerseys and wore them with regularity after the fact.
Okay, then it's Detroit.
That is correct. The Detroit Red Wings are not a third jersey team. Other teams that have not had official third jerseys include the Montreal Canadiens and the New Jersey Devils. Devils wear their old Christmas tree jerseys, but once a year, so they're not officially third jerseys. So you are correct. The Detroit Red Wings, no third jersey, so that's very good. Round two, Bruins who played for the Washington Capitals, celebrating a birthday today, or NHL leaders?
We'll go with the first one, Bruins who play for the Capitals.
Here's a fun question. 6'4" Czech defenseman was a Bruin in 2006-2007 before he was traded to the Washington Capitals for a fourth round pick. That pick was eventually traded to the Calgary Flames, who used it to select TJ Brody, Jeff Merrick. How you like them apples?
Two best names in the NHL right there.
Yeah, 6'4", Czech defenseman, former Bruin, played for the Caps. Who is he?
2006-2007.
Big ass Czech.
That's the dark post lockout era too.
All right, your guess, sir.
Yeah. I think you might have got me here, Greg.
The neighbor looking for was Milan Jurchina.
Jurchina.
Of course, the 6'4" Czech. Now, not a journeyman, but a guy that I figure a lot of fans probably know the name just because he was such a big freak. And
what's he doing now? Is he still playing anymore?
I think he might be retired. Tour stop, I believe, was with Columbus. But Milan Jurchina was the name we're looking for. So you are 1-for-2, round 3. Boston Bruins goalies, Jack Edwards quotes, or the films of the late, great Leonard Nimoy.
Hey, by the way, did you see Jack Edwards talking about how the Bruins took the high road on David Krejci with LTI, unlike the Maple Leafs?
No, I didn't see
that. Oh, yeah, go have yourself a laugh.
You mean the Days of Yore versus Jack Edwards fight right now? Yes, of course. It's been fantastic.
I didn't see that. That's fantastic. Awesome. All right, so Boston Bruins goalies, Jack Edwards quotes, or Leonard Nimoy movies?
Let's go with Leonard Nimoy movies. Sorry, Jeff. I know
Hey, he died today, right? He was the guy with the ears and the eyebrow?
Yes, he did.
Indeed. All right. Leonard Nimoy.
He's a graduate of Boston College as well.
He's a what?
Oh, is he now?
Graduate of Boston College.
Really?
I don't believe Boston College is on Vulcan. Leonard Nimoy film, sir. Which Star Trek movie of these made the fewest dollars at the North American box office? Star Trek, these all featured Leonard Nimoy, by the way. Star Trek Into Darkness, Star Trek The Search for Spock, Star Trek The Motion Picture, or Star Trek The Wrath of Khan? Which one made the fewest dollars at the box office?
It's definitely not the newest one. I think I remember reading something that I think it's Star Trek the movie, and because that's why Wrath of Khan almost didn't get made, because the first one did so poorly. So I'll go with Star Trek the movie.
That's a good thought. It was more about how slow and poorly reviewed the film was versus the box office, though. Star Trek the motion picture actually made $82 million. Making it second in the list that I just gave you. Wrath of Khan, 78.9. Search for Spock, 76.4. So it was actually Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, was the lowest.
Well, either 3 or 1. That, there was no way it was Wrath of Khan.
All right. So we soldier on. That's okay.
By the way, Milan Jurchina, still playing. KHL, Greg. Dinamo Riga.
Oh, there you go.
Still banging it out.
Might as well be retired. All right, here we go. We go back to some other ones and add another one. Round, what are we up to? 3? 4?
Yeah, I gotta go undefeated from here on out.
All right, so another one needs to be your toast. All right. Boston Bruins brutality, the 2010 gold medal game, or NHL records?
2010 gold medal game.
All right. Now, I obviously bring this up because tomorrow is the anniversary, the 5-year anniversary of the Sidney Crosby Golden Goal. If you've not read it, Josh Cooper has an oral history of that game on Puck Daddy today, speaking with a number of the players involved, including Sid and Aginla. It's very good. You should read it. The question I have for you, sir, obviously we all remember that game inside and out. Of course, it was the moment when the U.S. won silver. Who had the American goals against Canada in the gold medal game, a 3-2 loss? Who scored for the U.S.?
Parise had the game-tying goal.
Squeeze the puck, Roberto.
But the first...
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
Western Conference Center.
Oh, Ryan Kessler.
There you go. They're right. Ryan Kessler is correct. That's so exciting. So now we are in round 5, right? We are in the final stanza.
Championship round.
What?
Championship round.
This is extraordinarily exciting. All right, here we go. The categories that we're going to give you for this championship round are Boston Bruins goalies, NHL leaders and NHL records. Which one would you like?
Let's go with the goalies. I tried to put off the Bruins ones for as long as I could.
The black and gold. Oh, is that some strategy? Or are you afraid we might ask you real tough questions about a team you should know about?
Oh, I can go 80.
Oh, no, it was definitely strategy.
All right. NHL leaders gone. NHL records gone. Boston Bruins goalies is what we go with. From lowest to highest, rank the following goalies for their career goals against average while playing for the Bruins.
Ooh.
All right.
Oof, yep. That's hard.
Lowest to highest.
How's he going
to
get that?
Goals against average while playing with the Bruins.
You're nuts.
The goalies that we were looking for are Byron Defoe, Tuukka Rask, Tim Thomas. Give us the lowest goals against to the highest goals against.
You hate people, I swear.
He's throwing in Byron there as Lord Byron in there as a
right.
As a he's actually he's because he killed it for a couple years and he didn't play for long enough. Let's go.
All right.
Tim Thomas is definitely the bottom because he had a couple of those bad years. Bad, quote unquote. His save percentage was high. His goals against was high. His goals against was high though too.
Right.
So he's the lowest one. So it's between Byron and Tuukka for number one.
Let us all know what you're thinking. Talk it out.
Let's go, Rask, Defoe, Thomas.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Tuukka Rask, a 211 goals against average. Byron Defoe, a 230 goals against average. And Tim Thomas, as you correctly said, despite the Jennings and all that jive, a 2.48 goals against average with the Boston Bruins. That is correct. You have won a dramatic Game Show Friday victory, sir.
Thank you, thank you. Well, again, the issue with Thomas is that he had such terrible defense in front of him his first few years at the team that he just had high save percentages. He faced like 40 shots a game.
Yeah, I don't think we asked. Chris, congratulations, sir, on the big victory. Obviously, Maddie will be with you momentarily to tell you about your prize. Before you pimp anything, you are going to George Mason University. What are you studying at George Mason?
I actually graduated a couple of years ago.
I'm sorry. It was on your email. I thought you were still going there. What did you graduate with? What did you study there?
Marketing. And I just, much like a lot of people who come down to this area of the country, you just end up settling down here and you become another one of the outsiders in D.C.
Is that the Bill of Rights guy, George Mason?
He's the one who wrote the Virginia Bill of Rights, and it was, him and Washington get along, and it's like the statue of Mason on campus actually looks away from the Washington Monument to simulate that.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Nice touch.
He's urinating on a cherry tree. That's the other part of the statue. Chris, as you know, I escaped D.C. Late last year. Where do you live in D.C.?
Arlington. So, across the river.
Boston or better?
Shirlington. So, I don't know what we're considering. If it's better.
Not
than
bad.
Boston or
at least you got a little bit of nightlife there. So, good on you. All right, sweet. Anything you want to plug in the remaining moments here on Game Show Friday?
Yeah, sure. I don't write a hockey blog, but I have a... if you're interested in the American football, I have a Patriots blog called The Book of Belichick. And I'm on Twitter at Benty_BOB.
There you go.
Awesome.
That's all you need to know. Thanks, man. Thanks for playing. You're great, and congratulations on your big victory.
Yeah, dude.
Thank you very much.
Sorry I wasn't in better form today.
No,
for you, but thanks for coming on, bud.
Wasn't that exciting?
Jeff, thanks for being a trooper for all of us.
I think the word is hero, Chris. I think the word is hero.
Hero, trooper, same thing.
Yeah. Thanks, bud. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, that was super exciting. He did really well. Hero,
baby. Yeah, he was good.
There you are.
Yeah.
All right, listen.
Man.
Thanks to Jeffy for coming on today.
After an hour, I just feel spent. What am I going to be like after doing like 3 hours of junior hockey tonight on TV?
Tonight, yeah. Everybody
tune in. If you want to see a train wreck tonight, just tune in and watch me on. So I don't know if NHL Network's picking it up stateside.
But I hope so. They should always do that.
You can see. Watch me progressively get worse through the periods.
More importantly, do watch Jeffy on Monday. I know that there's a lot of people out there who believe there's only one network that covers the trade deadline. It's not true. There's another network that has stuff on it, yeah. Although not me, but they will have other
that
stuff.
Sucks.
Dangle will be on. So that'll
be what's
good.
Dangler doing, you know?
I have no idea. I just saw it's the strangest thing. Like, they've sent out the press release that was titled, Greg Wyshynski does not take part in our trade deadline coverage this season.
That's hilarious.
And then
you know, I'm gonna talk to Joel about that for next year, because I don't like that.
That's fine. Then there's like a long list of I didn't expect to be part of it after the merger. There was a long list of names taking part in the whole thing, and they all get mentioned, like literally everybody gets mentioned as to what they're doing that day.
Yeah.
Except Dangle, but like Dangle's email and name were on there, is like, or Twitter handle rather, and handle and name were on there as like, yeah, he's going to have something to do.
Here's why it's a weird day for things like what Steve does, because it's not as if he's, I don't think so anyway, he's going to be doing anything live. It'll be a piece of production for like 2 minutes or 3 minutes. But on a day like trade deadline, I'm just getting all TV and producer like, you don't want to be trapped in a piece of production when a trade breaks. You know what I mean? Like, in the middle of, like, a 2 or 3 minute piece from tape that you're married to, and then a trade happens, and you have to wait for that to finish. Like, it's always been this sort of, you know, push-pull as to how much production you have ready for that day, knowing full well that, man, if you get caught in a production piece, you're dead on a day like that.
Right.
Like, you That's almost just have to be live for the whole thing.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Thanks for joining us. Everybody, do check out Merrick on Monday. Do check out me and Leahy doing our
thing. What are you guys doing? What are you doing on Puck Daddy?
We're going to do, well, you know, the usual hour-by-hour blogs on the trade deadline, blogs on all the big trades.
Yeah.
I think there may be real-time audio reaction to trades from me and Leahy, because
really?
We're going to be in a Yahoo war room in Manhattan
cool.
for the deadline. And then afterwards, he and I are going to do a little... I think they're saying maybe 15-minute post show from the Yahoo Studios that'll be online too. That'll be
is that just fun. Audio or is that video? Is that video too or just
that'll
audio?
Be video. That'll be me and him on video.
Clean it up, Leahy. Clean it up.
I told you should have. I know he listens, so I'll tell us anyway. He was at practice today to get an update on Giordano, so he called me up to let me know that like there really wasn't one. And then we were talking about trade deadline, and the last thing I said to him was said, just keep in mind, you're going to have to wear a jacket and probably a tie for this thing on Monday because, you know, we're doing a video thing. And you would have thought I had said, by the way, you'll have to walk from your house on Long Island to Manhattan. the level of burden in his voice was palpable.
Attention at NHL Ties, Sean Leahy and Greg Wyshynski, Monday, post deadline.
I'll come correct. I'll bring it strong. I'll come correct.
Not Dimple style.
All right,
better get it right.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Chris. And we'll talk to you next week. So it sounds like Monday is going to be kind of a funky day, but we will definitely come strong with the post-deadline stuff on Tuesday, which should be great. All right, dude. Have fun. Break a leg and all that jive.
See you, bud.